John Faso, always great to see you. And again, congratulations on your win. So I guess the question I have today is, we talked a little bit about Social Security last time. Let's talk about Medicare right now. I'm a great believer, being somewhat to the left of things, I'm a great believer in, you know, Medicare for all. You know, a great industrial democracy, which, you know, takes care of everybody and precludes the insurance companies from being, you know, greedy and taking a big part of our money and our health care. So why can't we have Medicare for all?
Well, the question is, how do you pay for it? If you did that, the question would be, how do you pay for it?
With taxes.
And what would the level of taxes have to be in order to do that? And I think that that level of taxation would be a very difficult one to do. The second thing, and this is, I know you cast aspersions on insurance companies, and that's one of the
easy... I certainly do that.
That's one of the easy... One of the things that people often ignore is that Medicare is administered by third-party insurance companies now. It's just that if you have a Medicare, if you're in Medicare, you don't have the some of the options that you might have if you had a private insurance company. But you also, in Medicare, we've had now fully one-third of seniors are taking advantage of Medicare Advantage, which provides a whole range of additional benefits. So, and those are administered by third-party insurers. So, you know, remove the fiction from your mind, Alan, in terms of insurance companies. Insurance companies are making money on traditional Medicare, too, because they're administering it. The government isn't administering that system. It's third-party insurance companies that are administering it.
When you say third-party insurance companies, set me right on this, John. If I go to a doctor, right, the government pays the doctor.
They do, but they use a administrator to process the claim. And that's what I'm saying.
I don't get it.
The claim doesn't go to CMS. It goes to CDPHP, or it goes to Anthem, or it goes to WellCare, or it goes to United Healthcare, which are all contracted by these by the government to administer, to process all of those claims. So I do think it's something that we're going to have to take a close look at, because the financing on Medicare, if you look at the trustees' report on Medicare, it's even more precarious than Social Security. So again, it's driven by demographics more than anything else. So I want to take a full review of this so that we can make sure that it's there for people like you, but also there's something there for people in the future.
Now, John, what about all those people who write to me and say, I want a health care plan just like my congressman has?
The members of Congress and their employees are more likely than not in the regular federal employees' health care plan. It's no different.
Which is generous.
Which is generous, but it's also, and again, I haven't even crossed that threshold in terms of seeing what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
But you see these things on the intranet, and you see some of these things about, oh, congressmen get X, Y, or Z. And I can tell you that it's just a lot of those. Don't believe what you read on the internet about stuff like that, because it's generally not true.
Let's go sailing. There is now a Coast Guard proposal for, quote, anchorage sites on the Hudson River.
Yeah.
There's a lot of pushback on that. And you say?
I've said that I think the proposal is ill-advised. I think that the Coast Guard, and this is under the Department of Homeland Security and the Obama administration, they have come out with this proposal in conjunction with the maritime industry, looking for up to 10 anchorages, which they say are needed to provide a temporary respite for whether it might be weather conditions, or it might be the harbor either in New York or in Albany is filled and we need to basically stand by while we're waiting. I think the proposal has been very ill-considered, and it has really excited a lot of opposition, justifiably so. So it's one of the things that my understanding, and I've talked to some people about this in depth, is that they need nowhere near 10 anchorages. In fact, they may need only one or two. The idea, as I understand it, is that they want to provide an area on the river where in case there's bad weather or there's a storm or there are particular conditions that may make it difficult for them to get in and out of the harbor, where they can temporarily stay. But they're not telling people, well, how long is temporary?
And that's what it always starts.
That's right. And so what are the terms and conditions of this? But I, from what I understand, the proposal, and I've opposed the proposal because I understand it's so far above and beyond what they really need.
Maybe they're just over asking, so they get.
I think that's correct. And I, when I take office, this is one of the issues that I want to take up because I'm concerned about the way in which this proposal came about, the lack of real clear justification for it. But I think it's also important to remember that the river is a commercial enterprise, and it has been for hundreds of years. And it's very important that we have a safe marine transportation. All the heating oil and gasoline that's used in the Capital Region and in Kingston all comes up the river on barges. And so we want to make sure that that traffic and that transportation is done in the most safe and efficient way possible.
I only got 3 minutes, but I want to ask you a question. Given your choice between pipelines or railroad cars filled with oil, what would you take?
Well, I mean, I think pipelines are safer. Pipelines generally are a expeditious way to move fuel. Railroads, we've seen the increase in rail transportation coming out of North Dakota, for instance. You can see here, right here in the Port of Albany. When a couple of years ago, when the price of oil was high, those trains were just simply lined up, and there might be five or six a day coming into Albany. It's much less now that the price of oil is about half of what it was 2 or 3 years ago. But there are concerns about the transport in any vehicle, whether it's any modality, whether it's barge on rivers, whether it's in pipelines, whether it's on rail. And there are going to or trucks on the road. I mean, fuel comes to a terminal, to a port or a terminal, and then it's off shipped onto trucks, and those trucks drive on the highways. And so, all of these things have a certain amount of risk. I think that it's vitally important that we have a good regulatory structure to make sure that these means of transportation are routinely inspected. I know the state has stepped up its inspections of rail facilities, but the and there's an issue about the volatility of certain of the oil that is being transported, and whether or not that needs to be changed from a regulatory standpoint to require a lower level of volatility before it can be transshipped by rail.
So you'll take the pipelines over the railroad.
Unless you live in a place where there's no access to a pipeline. And then, you know, so all of these things, Alan, not every area of the country is going to have access to a pipeline.
Yeah.
The gasoline, the diesel, the heating oil has got to get to the homeowners and to the motorists and the businesses in some fashion. So it's going to be probably continue to be a combination of those different means of transportation. And as we move to alternative and renewable energies, hopefully the reliance becomes less.
It's always great to have our long-term friend John Faso, now in his role as Congressman-elect from New York's 19th District. John, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Alan.